Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Locked On Wolves podcast for July 16th. I'm Tom Schreier, co-founder of ZoneCoverage.com. On the phone with me today is Colton Molesky, who has been locked out of our site for a while. Colton, what did you do?
I honestly don't know. Technology, not my strongest suit, and apparently it doesn't like me much either.
Yeah, no, we're going to find out about some illicit behavior, I believe, from Mr. Molesky. Obviously, the listeners can tweet either of us. You can we can find a way to communicate this. We'll get to the bottom of this. But for right now, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty. Is writing a summer league piece. Unfortunately, now I'll wear this one. It was done Friday, I believe. And unfortunately, our two main editors, Brandon Warren and Sam Ekstrom, both decided to take a vacation at the same time. So obviously, they've been doing good work and deserve the vacation. But I've been booked and realized that we did not have Mr. Molesky's piece up. So we're going to try to do that by Monday. Although, you know, technology can do that. You know, it can get you good occasionally.
Apparently, technology thought I deserved a little bit of a hate to it today, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, they said, you know, you've been working hard. And you know, I've been asking too much of you, and I think it's time to scale it back. So you can't fight the forces of nature in this case.
Hey, here's the thing, though. My way around it is to do a show.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be careful here. Our technology is working as of right now. We hope that, you know, if you're listening to this right now, it did work. However, we have had shows eaten by the studio computer occasionally. It's got quite an appetite for sports content, I guess. Anyways,
yeah, well, we're working through it, and we're going to get to Summer League.
No, I know. There's nothing Colton Molesky likes more right now than Summer League. Literally, you know, as much as it's kind of hard, especially in the Twin Cities, to be inside, just given kind of the fortunate weather we've had. You know, it's been a nice, it kind of whets the appetite for basketball. What do you want to tackle with Summer League here?
First of all, I have been seeing some buzz. I've been looking at a lot of angles and ways to redraft the first round of the 2017 NBA draft, because, you know, that's what I do, is I like to look back and critique what happened and see if there was ways to tackle it better, see if there's ways to do it better. And I've already seen a bunch of places and a bunch of people. The buzz right now is, should Dennis Smith Jr. have gone third to the Celtics? Should they have taken the stud young point guard and not had pressure to re-sign Isaiah Thomas? And should they have added guard depth in general, just their team, whether they want to re-sign Thomas or not, taken Dennis Smith Jr.? And I think that's just a testament to how athletic and how much of a show he's put on throughout the summer league.
Yeah, that's wild. I think... you know, everyone right now is the GM's worst enemy, because it is so much easier to see kind of maybe you get some clarity when these guys move up kind of a level. Is there any, you know, there's been so much written about how athletic he is. We've talked about it on the show. Is there any risk that once you get into the NBA, you go, okay, well, this is why this guy went number 9? Or do you just see it as a guy who slipped through the cracks and, you know, Dallas kind of pounced on him when they could at number 9?
I think it's a little bit of him slipping through the cracks, primarily because of that knee injury that he took just over a year ago. I think it was about 13, 14 months to be exact, but I think that really had people worried, just because he's very aggressive getting into the paint. He's not going to just sit on the outside and look to pass it in. He's going to really drive and slash into the paint and into the basket, and he's going to make sure that he's in the thick of all the action. And with that knee injury combined with his style of play and how fast he's playing, the speed he's going at is pretty crazy. And I think that made a lot of people a little concerned and a little nervous when they're tackling the prospect of Dennis Smith Jr. on their team.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think that the injury aspect is always interesting for a GM. You know, just to play the GM's advocate here, if you draft a guy with a history of injury and that player doesn't pan out, then you go, you know, let's say your boss sent three. You go, man, you went from looking kind of smart and trying to get assets from Philadelphia in a draft that's deep but not necessarily top heavy. And then, you know, if but if you draft the wrong guy, a guy who gets injured, then all of a sudden, you know, none of that good grace, you know, comes your way. So I don't know. I mean, I'll be curious to see what happens. It looks like he's probably the most valuable pick right now. I think the purpose of doing one of these drafts, though, is just to kind of evaluate a player after summer league, you know, kind of take the advantage that the GM doesn't have. Are there any other players that stood out to you that you would have drafted higher just right off the top of your head?
Yes, definitely. Obviously, Malik Monk is somebody that I would have drafted higher, and I still think the Knicks should have taken him in that top 10 range. I also think that Markkanen was somebody who got drafted far too high, going to the Bulls at 7. I mean, he can shoot, and he is probably someone who's going to turn into a pretty solid scorer, but for all that length and height, I just don't see him really going after rebounds, really being aggressive in the paint and on the glass. And if I'm not seeing that in summer league from right now, I'm definitely not going to see it during the NBA season. So there's a couple spots already that I'm seeing maybe too high or too low for draft picks. A couple other guys that I really like Jason Tatum still, but maybe if we're looking at summer league right now, maybe he drops a couple spots. Just because of the whole Smith Jr. aspect. Josh Jackson done a pretty solid job, but maybe he falls a couple spots just because I don't know if he has been as defensive orientated as the Suns were thinking going into it. And again, it's just summer league, but just a few takeaways when you're watching the games. You always want to be critiquing the picks that you're making and not getting stuck in a certain course and then you stick with a guy too long.
Yeah, that's the old line that Flip always said, is you always know more about your guys than anyone else, and you try to deal them right before you know, someone else kind of figures it out. This does kind of, just from hearing you talk about how things went, a couple thoughts. The Wolves deal that already looked really good with Butler looks even better now, knowing that basically was a six-player draft. Unless you want to throw Dennis Smith in there, but a six-player draft and they had the seventh pick. Not too much more to say on that, but with Malik Monk, I see that as different than Dennis Smith Jr. I think really this is the first time I've heard Smith name and kind of being associated with a top pick. Where with Malik Monk, just following on Twitter, obviously I was focused more on what the Wolves were doing that night, and so my focus went almost immediately to Jimmy Butler. But just like following on Twitter and kind of reading it next morning, I mean, man, it seems like Monk's a weird case where it's just like, you know, how did this guy fall? Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I really do. Just because not only is he just such a prolific scorer, but he is really impressive on the defensive side too. My mind goes right back to the March Madness game that they had against UCLA and the way he played defensively, where he was going out there getting blocks when they played against North Carolina, and when he had not such a good scoring game, but he was still doing stuff defensively and going out and sticking to his guy, getting blocks, getting in the way of passing lanes, really doing a good job staying attached to players who move all over the floor, not just sit on the wing or are going to sit in the paint, but doing a good job sticking with guys, fighting through screens. I think he brings a bit of an edge defensively, and obviously when you can score and shoot the way he can, even if he has a little more trouble defensively to start out with, you stick with him because of that offensive threat. And I just can't believe that he fell so far into the draft out of the top 10, because, I mean, if you look at the way he plays offense, that's stuff that can be relatable right away to the NBA game, the way he can catch and shoot, the way he can drive in and get to the basket, how long he is. It's going to be really tough to guard him outside when he's shooting from range. And then the shots that he's pulling up from where he doesn't have to be on the three-point line to make it in college. He was a couple steps back on plenty three-point shots, and he was having no trouble sinking. I think it's a lot of stuff that you can translate into the NBA game.
All good stuff. It's exciting to see kind of young players come in the league. As much as there's turnover, and I'm sure, you know, no one envies the job security of an NBA player. You know, it is fun seeing the young blood come on and step up. And I'm very curious, more than anything, to see kind of how they'll translate to the NBA. Any final summer league talks before we get into some league transactions?
Markelle Fultz looks like he was just supposed to be out a couple weeks. Hopefully he can get rested up and get ready for the season. Let's see what we have in the 76ers team. I really want to see this young 76ers team play together. I just would like to see what these guys bring to this team and if they can start to turn this organization around.
Is this the most intrigue, I guess, or kind of excitement, hype always gets thrown around, you've had going into an NBA season, both with what's happening here locally with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but also just around the league in general?
I would say so, and I think it has to do with a really packed draft class combined with a really exciting free agency. I think you saw a lot of teams try and grab pieces and grab assets to put together really solid rosters to go against the Warriors in the West. I think you saw a bunch of teams get some exciting draft players who, in a draft where you have 6 to 7 guys who can actually contribute to an NBA team, usually it's only 2 or 3. I think it's really exciting for a lot of teams. Like, you think about Charlotte's got a guy in Monk who maybe can do some things. Celtics have a guy in Tatum who can maybe be really exciting. The Dallas Mavericks have Smith Jr. who could be a really exciting young guy. So we've got all this young talent. We've got 76ers trying to revamp with all these young guys. We've got a new Wolves team. We've got a new Rockets team. The Warriors have signed all their pieces back, so they're going to be as dominant as they were last year. The Cavs still have LeBron James out west. The Lowry-DeRozan tandem is still in Toronto and going to be at least making waves in the regular season, if not the playoffs. I think it'll be a really exciting NBA season because there's a lot of strong teams coming back that were strong last year and will be making a playoff push. And there's some new teams that are going to be trying to put their stamp on this NBA season, along with some new faces that will be trying to put a stamp on this NBA season for why this one is special. So I think there's a lot to look forward to. And I think this is probably one of the seasons where, for almost every fan base, there's a reason to watch NBA games all season long.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot that will be shaken out. And I think that's what sports are about. You can write it up on paper. You can prognosticate as much as you want, and that's exactly what we're going to be doing here for the next couple months or so. But it's going to be interesting once the games are played. One team that really has been intriguing a lot of people around the league, just fans of the game, is the Houston Rockets. What they're going to do, how Chris Paul and James Harden are going to play together. I don't think we've really focused on that deal too much, and I think it's important just to kind of give you some perspective about the league, not only the salary cap jumping dramatically recently and then kind of the unexpected fall, if you will. It was probably supposed to be around 103 and ended up at $99 million. But the fact that James Harden in the final year of his deal will make $45 million, that's what the salary cap in the NBA was in 1999, I believe. So just an immense growth of the league. What do you think about this? I mean, on one hand, for me, I'm always happy to see players get paid. I'm happy to see the Rockets do well just because I like Daryl Morey, and I kind of like that Morey ball or whatever mentality that they have over there, the techniques they use. On the other hand, I worry, what happens if a TV bubble bursts here, which seems to be kind of happening with cord cutters? And then just like, what do you have to do to be worth $45 million to a basketball team?
Well, I mean, it's pretty stunning too when you pair that deal with you. I think a lot of people forget last year when he signed, he already had the $200 million from Adidas that he signed for their shoe deal. So he is just raking in the money right now. And on the one hand, I mean, you've got to pay your star players. You got to keep them around to stay relevant in the NBA, to keep fans coming back, to keep the TV deals as high paying as they are. But on the other hand, you got to think maybe this is too much. I saw a stat where he's paid evenly and you don't and you don't count the kind of the breakup and how some seasons he gets paid a little less and other seasons he gets paid more. But if you just evenly break out for the next 4 years that contract, he's getting paid $241 a second in, while he's playing on the floor. That's a crazy amount of money.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. And I think if the math's done right, it actually is just like per second he's like in an NBA game, meaning like literally sitting and drinking Gatorade, he's being paid. And you know, I get that, you know, there's a lot of tension on these guys. There's a reason why all these shoes companies do these deals. Little known fact about Harden, he keeps all his money in his beard. I don't know if you knew that. Literally just, yeah, just stuffs it. No,
it's a safe place. He likes to have it close to the chest.
Yeah, exactly. No, but I think that's crazy. And I think it kind of encapsulates all that's happened this season. Curry getting the big deal. Just kind of all these teams in the arms race in the West.
But at the same time, when you compare it, Blake Griffin's getting $170 million for 5 years, but Harden has missed, what, maybe a fifth of the games that Griffin has missed?
Yeah.
Sixth, maybe even less?
Yeah, stays so healthy.
I mean, it's easy to look at that chunk of change and say that might be too much, but when you're comparing it to what other players are being paid around the league, and especially what, like, if you have a good player like Griffin who's getting paid that much, but he's so injury-prone and has so many surgeries on his knees and his legs, I mean, that makes it look like a pretty good deal. And I think you've got to sit back and say, okay, this sport is making the most that it's ever made, which means these players are going to make more. And at the end of the day, if you want to be a good team and you want to win games and you don't want to be at the bottom of your conference and your division, you've got to be able to buckle down and maybe cough up a little extra dough to these players who are really, really exceptional. And with the team they have right now, I really like them. I don't know if they beat the Warriors, but I really like them pushing a game 6 or 7 against them in a series. And, I mean, that's what you want if you're a GM. So I think this was a necessary move.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Looking at a team, we talked about Daryl Morey and how organized and innovative that team is. We got a team that's kind of the stark opposite, the New York Knicks, in the largest TV market in the league, a historic franchise and obviously a historic building, and yet has been historically bad recently. Do you like their recent move, bringing in Scott Perry as the GM? And how quick do you think the Knicks could turn it around?
I mean, Scott Perry, he was in the front office for when the Pistons were pretty solid in the early 2000s when they went to the conference finals, and then in 2004 when they went to the NBA finals, he was with the Detroit Pistons during that stretch, so that makes him pretty solid. But then his last stint in the front office was with the Orlando Magic. I believe it was 2012 is when he went to the Magic, and we've seen how that franchise has been run over the last 5 years especially. It's been a little bit of a decline and a little confusing just the moves that they've made. And so if you're judging the entirety of his career, I'd say he's about breaking even, and this is kind of his shot to see if he's going to end up on top or if we're going to say, wow, he's made some really weird decisions at the end of his career. Or he could be really good, and we could say, well, maybe that Orlando Magic thing was just a little out of the norm, and he's a really solid front office guy. So I think time will tell. I really hope that he runs this organization like he helped the Pistons run and help them win games. And that, I think that can make the Knicks a more exciting franchise as well.
You know, I think of some local comparisons. Now, it's always going to be a little different. The Knicks are expected to win now. They're expected to make the big free agency deals. There's just a lot of different pressure out there in New York. But I think of kind of Scott Layden, how people wanted to emphasize his, especially the team wanted to emphasize his San Antonio ties, where he was actually with the Knicks before, right? And kind of was criticized there. And just kind of, I don't know, how being placed in a different environment obviously yields different results, even if it's literally the same person. And then I kind of think of the Wolves, and even for baseball fans, the Twins, quote unquote, country club. The Wolves were really, really people here were excited that they kind of went outside the country club, went and got Tom Thibodeau, brought in kind of just a whole new scheme and to shake things up. And the Twins kind of the same thing, where Terry Ryan's second stint was not as good as his first one. And the Twins, obviously, largely, it's very different baseball and basketball, but largely have the same scouting department and some of the other people in key positions, but allowed kind of these new age thinkers to come in and shake things up. Do you see the comparisons, and how much do you think this is nature and nurture? How much do you think it's, you know, what Scott Perry brings, and how much do you think it's just, it's the same, you know, it's the same old Knicks, a lot of the same people, kind of the same Knicks problems?
Well, I think this year will be a little tougher to judge him on just because of the timing of everything. I think it would have been a lot different. I think I would have viewed this move a lot differently if it was at the end of the season. Instead, they keep Phil Jackson around. They keep that system in place right up until pretty much the draft. And so when they're looking at players going into the draft, they're looking at players that would fit into Phil Jackson's system, into the triangle offense. They're scouting the way Phil Jackson would want. And then when they fired him, they were pretty much stuck with his way of drafting, with his guys and with that system and with those scouting reports. And so Scott Perry, no matter what he does, he's kind of stuck in that old system still a little bit, just because those are the guys that are around, and he can't totally clear house because he wouldn't have a basketball team then. And so he's stuck with those draft picks. He's stuck with those moves because the Knicks, I think, were a little late. So I think to properly judge this, we gotta get a little bit into the season, see if you can do anything as far as before the deadline, maybe just make some trades, shake a couple things up in the organization. But I think right now he's just gotta try and find pieces for the front office and the coaching staff to really build for next year. And I know that's not what any fan wants to hear, is that before the season starts, you got to be looking forward to next year already. But I think for this to be really impactful, he's just got to use this year as kind of a staging year, kind of a setup year for moves that he can make next year.
Yeah, it's kind of funny when New York sports fans have to hear what Minnesota fans literally hear all the time, which is, I mean, this was Wolves forever, was wait until next year, wait, you know, Al Jefferson's going to pan out, you know, this, that, and that, the other thing. The flip side of that is now kind of the shoe is on the other foot, where Wolves fans are going, man, Tibbs is going all in. You know, he. I still think he has a couple moves up his sleeve. It's not going to be anything as major as what he's done so far. But he's, you know, he's brought in Teague, he's got Gibson, he's got Butler, he's got his guys, right? Crawford on the way. I think it's kind of funny where Tibbs is going, yeah, forget about that. It's not about this. It's not about next year. It's about, you know, right now. The good thing for Scott Perry, 5-year deal for him, probably within that time. And I think actually this is probably a smart way to run your organization, as much as the Knicks kind of should have jumped on this earlier. You allow kind of an audit. And this is what the Twins are going through, for baseball fans, Minnesota baseball fans who are listening to the podcast. They're kind of in an audit right now. And Felvey and Levine will kind of go through and decide who to clean out and who to keep. And you hope that Scott Perry is given the autonomy to do that. Because I think it is good for basketball to have the Knicks do well. I really think it's kind of the Knicks, Philadelphia, Chicago, Atlanta, and Washington, actually, I like their team a lot, but, you know, and then Boston, of course. You need those teams to be functional, right? In order to really get the East, have that shift of power back to the East. Any final thoughts on the Knicks, or should we be talking about other teams now?
Well, one final thing I would like to say about the Knicks is if I'm Scott Perry, the first thing I do is I sit down with Kristaps Porzingis and I say, just forget about everything that the old regime said or did or wanted to do. You are our guy. You're our young piece. We're going to build this team around you and around your offense and around the way you play basketball. Carmelo Anthony is probably not going to be on the team much longer, if he even makes it through this season. We're going to be making moves and draft picks. We're going to build this thing around you. So if you can just be patient for another year, this is your team, and we're going to be playing to win through you. Because he's their superstar, and despite how bad the Knicks have been the last couple of years, they did one thing right by drafting Kristaps Porzingis, and now they just kind of put pieces around him, and that makes it a little easier for Scott Perry.
Do you think the Melo to Houston deal could still happen? I am 100% on board with this, even if I'm not sure it will work, having three ball dominant players, kind of probably big ego guys, playing on one team. But if anything, especially in kind of what you would think would be the twilight of Melo's career, I would love to see him go on one more good team and just, again, have the West, you know, seething with power, trying to take over the Golden State Warriors.
I do think it could happen. I just, with how aggressive the Rockets have been pretty much the entirety of the offseason, I think they have a really good chance. Melo's had a lot of things in the news that have all pointed to him wanting this to happen too, which is the biggest thing with that no trade clause that he has in his contract. I see the Cavs too still pushing for him as well. So I really think he gets moved before the season starts, just because of how hard the Rockets are pushing, how much he's like that, and obviously his ties with Chris Paul as well made that sell even better for the Rockets. And with the way the Cavs have been pushing for really anybody, if he doesn't go to the Rockets, I think the Cavs are the next option, and I really don't see him sticking with the Knicks the way the last year has gone and the way the organization has handled him up to this point the last couple seasons, really.
Makes sense to me. Interesting to see what the Cavaliers would do. Any other transactions happening around the league you want to discuss right now?
First of all, Raptors looking to waive Justin Hamilton. For those of you guys who don't remember, Justin Hamilton is the center who was traded from the Nets to the Raptors for Damari Carroll. My question was, Carroll really that bad that you traded for a center that you're going to cut right away?
Justin Hamilton, by the way, a former Wolves player, I believe. If I recall, yeah, this was in the 14-15 season. We nicknamed him Hambone. I don't think it stuck. In part, maybe because he didn't play in the NBA in 15-16. but old Hambone, who was the 45th overall pick in 2012. That's interesting stuff. We talked about Brooklyn's strategy, I believe, a little bit, and just accumulating assets, trying to get picks back, trying to get over this really devastating trade they made that made the Celtics really, really good. I don't know. I know Dwayne Casey, when he was here in Minnesota, he really hyped Damari Carroll.
I know after that first year he was with the Raptors, he was solid in the last couple seasons. He's taken a dip, but, I mean, he was still a forward who could, from time to time, get hot from range, and he was still pretty solid defensively as a piece. Was he so bad that you had to get rid of him by trading for somebody that you didn't even want on your roster?
Yeah, no, it's interesting stuff. I kind of wonder. I didn't even talk. Toronto's actually another team that should be good. That is, I believe, the fifth largest market in the NBA. It is kind of Canada's team. I don't think the Vancouver Grizzlies are coming back anytime soon. I kind of do wonder, though, if they've hit kind of the skids a little bit, and as much as the East isn't getting that much better. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong. I think Washington and Boston pose more of a threat to Cleveland than Toronto does, and Toronto had a really good run here recently.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. Also, other news, Seth Alosha from the Hawks signed, I believe it was a 2-year deal with the Jazz to try and replace Hayward. If you're a Jazz fan, how hard do you have to squint your eyes to see Hayward instead of Seth Walsh out there this season? Yeah. That's the real question.
The funny thing with him, too, is I think he was, Wolves fans wanted to see him come over. This is a 33-year-old player. I think probably best known for his run with Oklahoma City, which was about 08 to 14. And that would make sense. That's literally when he was in his prime. As much as it's fun seeing Boston do well and seeing a college player reunited with his college coach, I mean, part of me wonders if it wasn't better for the league to have Hayward on Utah. Because, Utah with Hayward was a really good team. Is there any – where does Utah fit? Especially because they're going to be either in the Wolves division, going to be competing for a similar seed. Are they better than the Wolves? And if not, where do you see them kind of fitting in the West?
They're going to be in the same conference as the Wolves, and that's where the comparison stops. I don't think they'll be fighting for the same seed. I'm not sure if they even make the playoffs with the way some of these young teams look. Teams like the Nuggets, who went out and got Paul Millsap, and now they've got a really good front court and they're just waiting for one of their young guys to step up at the point guard position. I mean, can the Jazz be on a team like the Nuggets? I'm not even sure if they can do that, just because Hayward was so integral to their offensive system, and with him out of there, I mean, they've made some moves, and obviously getting Ricky Rubio helps that somewhat, but none of the moves they made over the summer, I believe, are big enough to really fill the void that's being left by Hayward.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. They made the best pitch they could, did not get him. You know, that's just the way kind of things go sometimes. Real quickly here, any other big news that's kind of you got to get out there?
That's all for me. I'm going to be trying my very hardest to get back working on the website so I can get out NBA coverage as fast as I can in written form.
Yeah, definitely check it out, zonecoverage.com. We will try to get Colton back in. I'm sure we will, you know, I'll be talking to Chad, our tech guy, about making sure. He might just want Colton to cool off a little bit. You know, he gets a little hot-headed now that he's writing 100 things.
A little bit of a heat check for me.
A little bit of a heat check for Colton Molesky. Anyways, I appreciate all the NBA talk. For Colton Molesky, I'm Tom Schreier. This has been the Locked On Bulls podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.